Sport Pods.
End to end, barnstormingly brilliant football.
That you were blowing teams away.
We became very, very close.
Welcome to the Premier League Storybook with me, Jake Humphrey. This is Chapter 4, The Nearly Men. We've heard about some of the great teams that won the early Premier League titles, but often just as memorable for fans are those sides who just missed out. There are so many title races that have gone down in Premier League folklore. Kevin Keegan's famous Newcastle team of the 1990s was a favourite of fans up and down the country, but just missed out on football's biggest prize. We'll speak to Les Ferdinand about how that side captured supporters' imaginations. But first, Martin Keown was involved in an annual tussle with Manchester United in the late 90s and gave us a taste of what it's like to be in the heat of a title challenge.
It's like being in a tug of war. And you have to, you pull on that rope every week, and you have to match their result. And when they lose, the rope comes your way. And you feel that momentum. But when you lose, the rope's going the other way. And it's hard to then stop it and pull back. But when you play one another head to head, I found it a relief. There's no pulling on ropes now. This is a me and you. And are you better than us?
Newcastle won hearts and minds under Kevin Keegan throughout the 1990s, finishing third as a promoted side in 1994, before building one of the most exciting teams the league has ever seen. In 95-96, they led the league all season, having a terrific battle with Ferguson's dominant Manchester United team and their brilliant new cast of young players. Peter Crouch grew up watching football in the 90s and was enthralled with that team and that title race.
Oh, the Newcastle Man United one was the one for me. I just the jeopardy of it, Newcastle being ahead, Manchester United catching them. Just the way Newcastle played that season and them not winning it, it felt like it was their time, and then just Manchester United just showed their class and it just came to the fore. And for me, it was just so exciting watching them, and Kevin Keegan's obviously outburst, absolutely iconic. I just loved watching like how they used to throw people forward, like Asprilla, Ferdinand, Shearer, David Ginola. The team just was, even the centre halves, like you say, Philippe Albert, like no one wanted to defend. They all wanted to attack, and they were blowing teams away. But then you look at the United side and you just see how much quality and how much class they have. And you know, Cantona, I mean, listen, you know, I'm far from a Manchester United fan, let's be honest, but you just had to admire the class that they had in that team. And Cantona scored some massive goals. Always remember that, the volley at Newcastle that sealed it really for them, didn't it? And it was touch and go, wasn't it? It was so close, and you know, one goal decided it. And often it was Cantona that decided those moments.
As we know, Newcastle just missed out in the end to Manchester United in that remarkable title battle. Peter Schmeichel, of course, was in goal for United and was full of admiration for his opponents.
Well, I enjoyed watching them play. I thought they played some exciting stuff. It was risky, the way they played. They were trying to score goals all the time, and they were committing people forward. And the type of players they had, like Asprilla, you know, Ginola, players like that are not defensively minded, puts, of course, you know, it, no, don't put it at risk, it's the wrong word, but it's a challenge if a team, you know, really manages to put pressure on a team like Newcastle. Then, of course, you have less players who can defend. But it was brilliant to watch, and it was always exciting, you know, and Kevin Keegan brought some incredible players to that team. And, you know, one of them, I just mentioned that, it's brilliant. I mean, who could imagine that someone like Asprilla would choose England to come and play? And I think that team, it's probably one of my favourite teams that was my own to watch. And of course, the battles that we had with them were interesting.
Kevin Keegan's team was a side loved by fans up and down the country, whether they supported Newcastle or not. Even now, they're a favourite of football lovers, no matter their allegiance. In Newcastle itself, however,
they're still treated like absolute gods. My BT Sport colleague Lindsay Hipgrave is a diehard Toon fan, and some of her favourite footballing memories are watching that mid-90s Newcastle team.
The whole city was just behind the team and the manager, and you looked forward to every game all week because it was just so exciting. And I think it's why I fell in love with football. I was just absolutely mesmerised it by the atmosphere, by the songs, by the quality of the football. It was just end-to-end, barnstormingly brilliant football that you could not love. I think that team to me just meant if they scored three, we would try and score four. Or in the case of Liverpool, we would score three and they would score four. The philosophy was just to outscore anyone we played. And it was just fantastic football to watch. Free-flowing attacks, wing play, and completely unpredictable. We had Tino Asprilla, who you could probably compare to Saint-Maximin now, because you just never knew what he was going to do. And Ginola as well, who would get you out of your seat. He was such a good flair player. And the manager just had everybody sucked in and bought into to what he was doing. And everyone was united behind him and behind the team. He was the most charismatic person and infectious, and everybody loved him. And I think because he came in, he sort of saved us when we were in a really bad situation. He became the Messiah. That's what everyone called him. Keegan was the Messiah. He saved us. And then he just gave us the best, most fun, most crazy ride that we had for that whole period. So I just loved it.
Lindsay told us what it was like when Kevin Keegan left in early 1997. Looking back, that really seems like the start of the end for the team that became known as the Entertainers.
It was like someone had died. It's the only way I can explain it. It was like a bereavement because it was so out of the blue at the time. There was like this feeling of shock through the whole city because we were doing well. We were doing all right. We'd beaten Tottenham like 7-0 and Shearer was still banging goals in. And then all of a sudden, the guy who was the Messiah, who was our hero, announced his resignation, and everyone was just absolutely devastated. It was like he was gone. And the only way I can explain it is like it was actually like a bereavement. As much as I love and adore Keegan, he was probably looking back on it now, just that little bit too emotional. It's just one of those things where you look back and you just think of how different it could have been and how gutted you are that it didn't go our way. But I think that it was the games against Man United that killed us. You know what I mean? Those two games against them, that's what done for us.
So what was it about these nearly men that captures us so much? Is it a British thing? Newcastle finished second for two consecutive seasons between 95 and 97. Up front for both of those seasons was Les Ferdinand, and he told me his memories of starring for that team and just missing out on the title.
Well, Les, let me start with almost an apology because we've called this episode the nearly men of the Premier League, winning the Premier League. And I don't want that to come across as a negative. In fact, like, to get close to winning the Premier League is an amazing achievement. But it made me think, how often do you sit and reflect on just how close you came those two seasons with Newcastle?
No, I'm probably, there's not a day that goes by that you don't reflect on it. You know, it hits home more when you see someone lifting the Premier League at the end of the season and thinking that we were so close, yet so far away in the end.
Yeah. And which moment does your brain take you to?
Probably more than anything, the Liverpool. A lot of people talk about the Man United game, but for me, I think there's momentum. You gain momentum through the season and you lose momentum through the season. And we'd lost a bit of momentum and we'd come into that game. And I think had we won that game, that would have given us the momentum to go on and win the rest of our games for the season, because I think it would have given us such a lift. Mm. Unfortunately, we lost that game. And I think although things had started to go wrong before then, it was that for me was a real pivotal point in the season for us.
So what had gone wrong then before that? Because I remember it was like you'd lost 3 of 6, hadn't you, going into that one, including, of course, against Manchester United, and that was who this big battle was with. Now that you reflect all these years later, what do you identify as the reasons?
I always felt that, you know, my thoughts after we'd lost it and through the years that followed. And I don't think it's changed. I think, you know, we were on such a high. And as you said, we were 12 points clear with game in hand. And I always remember that the losing of that first game, where we went down to being 9 points clear. But the feeling in the dressing room was that don't really matter. We're still 9 points clear with the game in hand. We win our game in hand, we're 12 points clear. It doesn't matter. And then in the space of, like, you got Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, you've lost three games. Do you know what I mean? And all of a sudden, that 12-point gap now becomes 3-point gap because you haven't won your game in hand yet. And we just... there wasn't enough... it's hard to say winners in the team, because I think we all were winners. So I don't think you play football without being a winner, but sometimes knowing how to win. And I think, you know, we had a real kind of like blasé team in terms of, you know, okay, you score two, we'll score three. You score one, we'll score two. And I think for the neutral, it must have been great to watch. And for the centre forwards, it was great to play in. But I think everyone knows to win the Premier League at times, you need to win a game 1-0. And we just probably didn't have that in our makeup.
And you know that speech that Kevin Keegan, they sort of, oh, we'll love it if we beat them. Like, we now know what that did for Man United. I do wonder sometimes, what did it do for your dressing room?
I think, you know, I always remember it, and going in the next day, and obviously it was the talk of the town in terms of everyone saying, I'd love it. Copying what Keegan said. But Keegan was always someone that wore his heart on his sleeve. And as a player, people always want players to wear their heart on their sleeves and show that they care. And I felt to a man, there wasn't anyone in that dressing room that looked at Keegan and thought he'd lost it. They were all like, yeah, we know how he feels because we feel like that. You know, so I don't think it was a case of, oh, he's lost the psychological battle of Alex Ferguson. Well, I don't think any of us looked at it like that. We just knew that he was a passionate man. He wore his heart on his sleeve. He said what he felt.
Yeah.
And that was it.
I mean, you probably saw him being like that before games, after games, in training. He probably said to you, like, I would love it if we beat them. So I understand how that wasn't necessarily a big deal when you saw that side of him regularly.
No, because everybody else made it a big deal, but for us, as players, the next day we went in, and of course there's things that happen throughout the season that you laugh and joke about, and, you know, obviously you take the mickey about, and everyone came in and was taking the mickey about it. But I don't think anyone felt to themselves, oh, Kevin's lost it here, you know, and this is going to cost us the title.
How would you describe Kevin Keegan as a manager?
Probably one of the managers I enjoyed playing for the most, in terms of the way he was as a person, how he tried to get the best out of people. I would say that tactically, probably not the best manager I've had tactically, but he knew the way he wanted his team to play, and he knew the type of football that he wanted to watch, and he knew the type of football that the Newcastle United supporters wanted to watch. And so the team's geared up to play that way.
And let's talk about you personally, because you came in with that, you know, £6 million, which, that's not a small amount of money now. At that time, I mean, it was just huge. Mm-hmm. Can you again sort of reflect for us on whether that brought pressure, whether that was shoulders back, chest out, you felt great about it, the sort of impact that figure and the move to that club had on you?
I think, Jake, before I'd gone to Newcastle, I think the previous couple of seasons at Queen's Park Rangers, you know, I'd scored 20-odd goals a season. When at my last year at QPR, I'd scored 26 goals. So I felt wherever I went, you know, I knew I was leaving QPR, and I felt wherever I went, I was going to be able to score goals. So I didn't go there thinking, well, you know what, someone's paid £6 million for me, I'm under pressure to score goals. I was very confident in myself, without being arrogant and not without being flash or anything like that. I was just very confident that wherever I went, I could score goals. As long as they got the ball in the box, I would score goals. So when I went to Newcastle, I always remember sort of like we had a couple of... We had a couple of friendlies, and I hadn't scored in the friendlies, and a couple of people go, you know, he hasn't scored yet. And I remember we played Northampton. And I remember one of their defenders went to me, you ain't scored yet for Newcastle, and I don't think you're going to start here today. And that was just like the pep talk I needed. I ended up scoring two goals, like, you know what I mean? And that was it. I was off and running, and then scoring the first goal at St. James's Park. I'd always known what the number 9 shirt I'd always had a feeling about what the number nine shirt meant to the Newcastle supporters. But when I scored on that opening day of the season, the first goal up the Gallagher end, I mean, if there was a roof on the stadium at the time, the roof would have come off.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow.
Amazing. I always think that there are certain sets of supporters that feel the weight of responsibility of supporting that club, almost like it's handed down over the generations. Like Liverpool supporters are one group of them. You could talk about the same with Celtic and Rangers. There are a few others, but Newcastle United fans are definitely in that mix, aren't they?
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. It's not the easiest place in the world to go. It's not everybody that can go and put the number nine shirt on and play for Newcastle United. You know, I always say to my friends, Man United's another arena that you can't go and, because you've been good somewhere else, think you're going to go out week in, week out. It takes a special type of player to play out in front of those crowds and those supporters week in, week out.
And it's not just about trying your best for them. It's the style of football they want. And I mean, when I think back to that team, you just already said it's a brilliant team for a striker to play in. It was an amazing team for me to watch, even as a Norwich fan. So I can't imagine what it was like for Newcastle fans. What was it like in that early part of the season? I mean, you had a brilliant start and you lost one game until early December. You must have thought, this is exactly the right team at the right time for me.
Yeah, it was probably everything I dreamed about and more. The only difference about the dream is I probably would have scored a hat-trick on my debut. But, you know, the one goal was enough. But as you said, as a team, you know, Keegan had said, when I spoke to him, I was going to Newcastle, one of the things he said to me, I'm building a team to try and win this Premier League. And he was true to his word. You know, we became very, very close.
Yeah.
And as you said, in that first sort of like three, four months of the season, it was everything every player would have dreamt about in terms of where he wanted to be and how he was playing and the results we were getting at the same time.
And I think you actually captured fans around the country, you know, as well as just Newcastle fans, didn't you?
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, I used to come back to London and I used to see people and they used to say to me, they said, I'm not a Newcastle supporter, but whenever Newcastle's on the TV, I make sure I get home to watch it. And now I sit back and think about it. It was only because they knew they was going to see goals one way or the other. Yeah, yeah. We were either going to let them in or we were going to score them, yeah?
And did you feel that defensively they were a little bit negligent, or was it just part of, I mean, you know what, you can say that, but actually when you reflect, it wouldn't be anything like the story it was if you were just grinding out 1-0 wins, would it?
No, exactly. And you know, I felt sorry for our defenders because we were so attack minded. Even our defenders were attacker minded, because you look at Philip Albert and people like that, and got forward and scored goals. So it was a team effort. And you know, that season I was voted Northeast Player of the Year and all that sort of stuff. And I think, had it not been me, it probably would have been Darren Peacock, because he was immense that season as well. So, you know, that just goes to show, you know, he was doing his job, but we just probably weren't helping him enough. Not just Darren, but the rest of the defenders.
And let's just reflect on that lead that you did have. You know, 10 points at Christmas. It was a big lead. It was a big lead towards the end of the season as well. In all honesty, had you thought you'd done it?
No, I personally will say to you no. I remember coming back from we'd had a couple of days off, and I'd been to London, and I remember coming back from London and going straight to the training ground. I remember walking into the training ground, and if you remember, Jake, if you remember back then, we used to have open training sessions every day. So every day you turned up the training ground, supporters are there to watch you train. And I remember coming back from London and driving into the training ground, and there was a fella that had a Newcastle United shirt on, and it had Champions 95-96.
Oh, no.
You know, when there's just something that you don't want to see, because I felt everyone had felt it was done and dusted. You know, we were going to win this. And I think it was Peter Beardsley that had done a calculation, and he'd said, if we'd have carried on winning the way that we were winning, we would have had the league wrapped up by March. By the end of March. And it was, and I'm not saying that was what, you know, everyone sort of like complacent, but I think we started to believe that, yeah, we were already there.
I can't imagine how many times you've thought about that in your head. Yeah. Let's just talk about a couple of the players that you played with as well in that team. I mean, Faustino Asprilla, There's a million stories knocking about Faustino Asprio. I'd love to hear one from you.
Faustino was like, I mean, I always remember him turning up. And I remember before it happened, we played Arsenal and we'd lost to Arsenal. And Kevin Keegan had a right go at the players in the changing rooms afterwards. And as always, when a manager has a go, everyone sits there. No one wants to be the first to make a move and go in the shower. So, you know, he ripped into a few of us and we sat there all sitting there. And then he went, right, you know, let's get on the bus and get back. And no one wants to make the first move. But I did. I got up and I take my gear off and I walked into the shower. And he came into the shower and he said to me, he said, I know what's happening here. I said, what's that? He said, because you've bailed us out so many times with your goals, everyone's expecting that you're going to get a goal. And that's not fair on you. So he said, I'm going to get someone to help you. And I think I've got the fella. So I said, excuse me. I said, okay, good. And he didn't tell me who it was, didn't say anything. And then I think it was a week or two later, it was probably 2 weeks later, that you saw like a Sprilla, because if you remember, he came and he left because they couldn't sort the deal out. And he'd gone and then a few weeks later, he was back again and he joined in training. No, he didn't actually join in training. We'd signed him and we were playing Middlesbrough away. And he came to the game and Keegan said, I'm going to have him on the bench. And I remember him coming off the bench and it was an instant impact. You know, I mean, he did a bit of skill on the edge of the box, crossed it for Steve Watson. We won the game 2-1 and that was it. He was in the side from then on.
And did he unbalance the side at all?
No, you know, I think he got the blame. People said that, you know, Sprilla coming into side, messed up the equilibrium of what we had before. Which is unfair because Keith Gillespie got injured just before Christmas, done his hamstring, he was out for a while. And so Keegan was trying to fit his best players into the side. Peter Beardsley was one. So we had an attacking effect down the left in David Ginola and Keith Gillespie down the right early part of the season, which was ferocious for us. And then, Keith got injured. Asprilla was never going to be a right winger. Peter Beardsley was never going to be a right winger. So we kind of like got exposed down those wings a little bit in terms of the ball going out there and not coming in the box as much. David Ginola became the supplier down the right-hand side. So we had to try and change what we were doing. But to blame Asprilla would be, you know, for me, it'd be outrageous, really.
And then it didn't happen. United got the title in the end. What are your memories of the day that they won it?
It was probably I think after the Liverpool game, we went to Blackburn. The week we played during the week, we went to Blackburn at the weekend, and we lost there. And I think the writing was on the wall. I think we'd kind of all realised that we'd probably thrown our best chance away of ever winning the title. And so the day that they actually lifted the title, I think they went to Middlesbrough. We were at home to, I think it was Spurs. And it kind of like, that if they won, they were going to win the game. And we didn't see them losing the game to Big Phil. Although we had to go and do what we had to do, we just didn't see them losing the game. So the writing was already on the wall for us, to be honest.
And how long did it take for a reset? Because obviously that summer, Alan Shearer came in. What are your memories of kind of dusting yourselves off and getting ready to go again?
I mean, it was, we obviously come to the end of the season and, you know, kind of gone away with England and everything else. And you try to, you know, people say you try to forget it. But I think as footballers, you have to dust things off and you learn from your mistakes. And we went away and we were probably down and depressed about it for a bit. But then once pre-season started again, we thought, right, a new campaign. Alan came in for a record £15 million. So we thought, right, we've had another striker to the mix. Maybe this will get us across the line. And I think we went to Thailand, Japan and China. I think that was our pre-season tour. We came back, we were full of beans thinking, right, ready for the start of the season. And we were all knackered when we got back. Like, do you know what I mean? The first game of the season against Everton, we struggled to get into the season. And it took a little bit of time for us to get going as a team again.
But by October, you'd got going because that was when you played Man United, of course. 5-0. Would you say that was the highlight of your Newcastle career?
Yeah, I think, you know, we had some good games and we played some good teams and had some great victories. But I think in terms of giving back to the supporters, because I remember it's all like Man United at the start of that next season humiliated us in the Charity Shield at Wembley. And the one thing I do remember, the overriding memory of that game was we'd been so bad in the game, but the supporters stayed behind and clapped us off the pitch when we perhaps didn't deserve it. And, you know, we were desperate to give them something back. And, you know, that 5-0 victory, they still dine out on it up there. So it was us giving a little bit back to the supporters who we'd let down on previous occasions.
What are your memories of that game specifically? It was like all the goals were well shared out, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean, it was really... the goals were shared out, and I remember, you know, Dan Peacock getting the first, Ginola getting the second. I got the first, shared the fourth, and Albert with the audacious chip at the end. But reflecting on the game afterwards, sitting in the changing room and thinking, we probably had more chances in the first game when, you know, Schmeichel's outstanding, when we should have actually beaten them at home. We probably played better in the first game, but scored more goals in the second, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that was my immediate reflection. Obviously, we'd won the game, we were elated, but the team wasn't performing in the way that the team had performed in the previous season. So although we'd beaten them 5-0, we didn't feel like the same team that had played Man United last season.
Then you had the period where Kevin Keegan decided to resign. Mm. Tell us whether you as the players had any inkling before that happened, what was going on?
No, we didn't. You know, we was as shocked as everybody else. You know, sometimes you can see things going a little bit pear-shaped and the manager's not quite with it. There was no sign of it. You know, we were on a decent run. We were doing quite well. We were finding our feet and we started to play some decent football. And then all of a sudden we were hit with the fact that, you know, Kevin's decided that he's resigning. And, you know, when I sit back and reflect on it, I don't think Kevin ever recovered from that first season, if I'm being honest. And, I don't know whether he's ever said it or whether he ever will come out and say it, but I'm not sure he fully recovered from that season that we should have won it.
It sort of emotionally and...
Yeah, emotionally. Because, you know, the roller coaster ride that we'd gone on that season... It took a load out of us. So what it must have done to him, because he was so desperate for the Geordie public to win something, and he was so desperate to be the person that gave it to them because they had given him so much. I'm not sure he ever recovered from the fact that we didn't get across the line.
And what impact did it have on all of you? Because obviously he was such a central part of one of the greatest seasons of the football club's history.
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost it was disbelief, because I remember Terry McDermott coming in and reading the statement out. And you know what? Probably, you know, when you say, was there any signs of it? We played Blackburn on Boxing Day. Before he resigned, we played Blackburn on the Boxing Day and we lost up at Blackburn. And I remember in the changing rooms afterwards, he was talking again and he had a rant and stuff, and we was all in there, and, you know, like I said, everyone's head was down. And then the very next game, the 28th, we were playing Tottenham at home, and he came in the change rooms and he said, "I could drop every single one of you from the team that played the other day, but I don't believe that you can be that bad again. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you an opportunity to redeem yourselves." And we went out and we won the game. We beat Tottenham 7-2, I think it was. And what I do remember was after the game, he didn't go and do the press. Terry McDermott went in. And all the time I'd been at the club, Kevin had always done the press after the game. And Terry McDermott went in and did the press after the game. And so that probably, thinking back, that was probably the first signs of something that weren't quite right in terms of what was going on at the club.
I think that first season when you finished second, right, it was all about, bloody hell, we should have won the title. Mm-hmm. So what was the emotion like that next season where you finished second again? Did it almost feel like, did you actually give yourself the opportunity to be proud of finishing second in the Premier League?
No, because we felt we were never really in the race to try and win the Premier League that second season. We finished second. And again, we played some good football. Obviously, we had the fact that Kevin Keegan had left, but Kenny Dalglish had come in with, you know, obviously the reputation that Kenny's got as a player, as a manager, and what he'd done at Blackburn. We thought if there was anyone that could replace Kevin Keegan, it was going to be Kenny Dalglish. And so, yeah, we finished the season really well in the end and got into that second place. But it was never felt like the first season where we had a chance of winning the league. We never felt in that second season we'd done enough to try quite put ourselves in the frame of trying to win the league.
And how did you come to the decision to leave?
Well, it was the decision was kind of like, I didn't really come to the decision. The decision was kind of like forced upon me, really. I remember the club needed to raise some money and they'd had bids for me in terms of the club needed to raise $6 million. That's what they were saying. And I remember speaking to Kenny Dalglish and him saying, look, the club want to raise $6 million. I don't want to lose you. But there's times next season where I'll go away and I might play with one striker. And that, you know, that striker's going to be Alan. And I said, well, what you're saying to me is if I've scored 15 goals and he's not scored any goals, that striker's still going to be Alan. And he went, yeah. And I said, okay, well, look, don't go in and fight for me because you're telling me I'm not going to play for your team. And where I am right now, I need to be playing. And that was our conversation. And I remember, you know, I was fortunate. I was 30 years of age and, you know, Tottenham, there were a few clubs that had come in and shown an interest and Tottenham had paid, bid the $6 million to bring me back to London. And it was a team I supported as a boy. So I thought, yeah, well, you know, I could live a dream here. And I probably made a decision out of pride rather than out what was the best thing for my footballing career at the time.
Do you think for your footballing career, staying there would have been better?
Yeah, quite possibly. In terms of what they were doing, well, I mean, I left and they finished, they ended up in the FA Cup final in two seasons on the spin. So, yeah, probably it was probably not the right decision for my footballing career because I was going to a team that was struggling and trying to find its feet. Whereas, you know, I was leaving a team that won, not won the league, but finished second in the league and was on the up.
But if you weren't going to be as involved as you would have liked, or if you didn't get that vibe, I think sometimes you need to make the difficult decision, don't you, at times?
Exactly, yeah. And like I said, instead of staying there and fighting, because listen, if I've scored 15 goals and the other geezer hasn't scored any goals, no matter who that striker is, I don't see the manager dropping.
Yeah. So let's sort of reflect then where Newcastle sits in your career. I mean, you played more games at QPR, you played more games at Spurs. But when I think of, maybe it's the age I'm at, when I think of Les Ferdinand, I just immediately just see you in the black and white of Newcastle. All these years later, what do people talk to you about when they talk about your career?
Yeah, I think most people talk about that Newcastle side because of the fact that it was on the verge of, it looked like it could win the league. We played good, attractive football. Now, I played at QPR where they played attractive football. And I say to people, with all the goals that I scored in the Premier League, I scored a majority of them at QPR. Yeah. But, you know, I went to Newcastle and because for that two seasons, I mean, and when I speak to people and say I was only at Newcastle for two seasons, they find it really hard to believe because of the way I get treated by the supporters and the people when I'm up there. And the fact that everyone talks about my career and it's normally Newcastle that you speak about. But I often say to people, you know, QPR's in my heart has to be number one, you know, but I thoroughly enjoyed my time on Tyneside. It was everything I dreamed about and it just ended a little bit too quickly for me.
I'm always interested in whether these great teams kind of stay in touch, whether you have any reunions, whether you still get together and talk, whether there's a little WhatsApp group. Who do you still see from that team?
Not a lot. Not a lot of them. You know, in work, I see Alan Shearer sometimes. I played golf with him a few times. And then there was a little reunion when the takeover happened and all the boys were getting back together and, you know, they went up and was invited to a game. Unfortunately, I work on a weekend, so I couldn't go. But yeah, I've spoken to Lee Clark. I've only spoken to Lee Clark really because he's always been after a job every time our manager gets sacked. But there's a couple that I've kept in touch with and seen from time to time.
They were good days. They were good days. And hopefully you're at a point now where it's the fact you were part of a special team and the fact that you finished twice in the Premier League in successive seasons rather than what could have been. But I know you're a sort of natural born winner at heart, so it's probably difficult.
Yeah, very difficult. You know, when you say that you've part of a good team and you finish second, it doesn't really make me feel any better because we should have finished first. And everyone only remembers first. No one remembers second. Do you know what I mean? I know we're talking about it now, but normally people don't. If you said to most people who finished second in 95, 96 season, they probably wouldn't be able to tell you.
But I think they do remember Newcastle finishing second because of the way you did it. Do you know what I mean? It's almost like they might struggle to remember who won it.
Yeah.
You know what? I love that. What a brilliant trip down memory lane it was for me personally. And if you're a similar age to me, or maybe if you're not, I'm sure you enjoyed that as well. And I think that, you know, I automatically think of that Newcastle team when I think of 90s football, and they still didn't win the big one. I know to them it matters and to the fans it matters, but to me it kind of doesn't. You know, the magic of that team stands the test of time, whether they won the Premier League or not. And you know what? Winning the big one has actually eluded loads of great teams. Jurgen Klopp finally broke Liverpool's 30-year hoodoo by winning the Premier League in 2020. But for those players in between that period, the pressure was sometimes unbearable. Here's Steve McManaman on what it was like at undeniably one of England's greatest clubs.
I think there was always pressure on Liverpool that, like there is at Manchester United at this moment in time, when you don't win anything, you're reminded of it every single season. So it's 2 years since you've won anything, then it's 3 years, then it's 4 years, and then you might win a trophy, then it's 5 years since you've won the title. And they change the narrative whichever way it suits you. So yes, but there definitely is more pressure when you've been successful, when you've got a history like Liverpool have, and you're the most successful team around. And Anfield is littered with past successes of teams that have won trophies and pictures of them here and everywhere and statues of these wonderful players, ex-wonderful players around the ground, that there is a huge amount of pressure on you to be successful, definitely. It happened at Real Madrid when I was there. The pressure is always there. And it'll happen. It'll always happen at the best teams. And it should happen at the best teams because that's what drives you forward. I mean, Brendan should have won it. You know, that game when they lost to Chelsea 2-0, they should have just drew the game 0-0 because it was that. I mean, I was at the game. And sometimes you get, it's just a little bit of, I don't know, man management experience. I don't know. But that game, the way Chelsea played and the way they started the game, Liverpool struggled to break them down. I know Steven slipped, but that had no, as far as I was concerned, that had no reasoning on the game. That just put more pressure on the Crystal Palace game, the next one. But that game, they should have just went, look, it's one of those days today. We'll finish 0-0 and we'll take a point. And then we'll go to Palace and we'll beat them and we'll still be fine. And that's what they should have done. So why Jürgen did it and Brendan didn't at the time, I don't know. As I said, maybe it's a little bit of fortune. I mean, listen, Jürgen seems absolutely superb now, and they deserve to win the titles. Of course, they have done, and they ran Man City close and then won it, and they deserve to. But I don't know why, you know, Brendan didn't do it or Rafa didn't do it years before. Sometimes you just need a little bit of luck.
Michael Owen came into a Liverpool team that hadn't won the title in almost a decade. Unthinkable now.
In my time at Liverpool, we came second in the league. We obviously won a lot of cup competitions. We could never win the league. And of course, it was Arsenal that probably challenged them then after we had a little go. It was Arsenal with Wenger, and then Chelsea came with Mourinho. And, you know, it was always difficult to go and win it. I mean, that's how it should be. You need to be absolutely exceptional. And, you know, the teams that I played in, we could beat anyone on our day. In fact, we did beat anyone. In fact, we had a brilliant record against Manchester United at the time. But over a sustained period of time to win the league, we were never quite there. Liverpool Football Club went through the doldrums a little bit. You know, 5-10 years before I got into the team, you know, Liverpool were finishing in a place in the league that was just unheard of, especially after the successes they had in the 80s and whatever. So it was, I think, a little bit the opposite in that the team that I came into just got into the FA Cup final, but then I came into the team about a year or two later, and that team actually went on to win the UEFA Cup, almost put a marker back down in Liverpool that Liverpool are still, you know, a European force. We did go and win the FA Cup. We won the Worthington Cup at the time. We won the Super Cup, being the Champions League winners, Bayern Munich in the final. We won the Charity Shield. You know, we won the League Cup again soon after that. It was, you know, we were putting ourselves back on the map, I think.
Later on, other Anfield strikers felt the effects. Here's Peter Crouch.
Yeah, it was frustrating. It just felt like the recruitment, mate, really. I think you look at the United sides, I think the Chelsea sides that won it, Arsenal's invincible team. I mean, they're unbelievable sides. I mean, playing against that Arsenal invincible team was just, there was no weakness. It was an amazing team. Manchester United for so many years, so many different kinds of teams. Mourinho's Chelsea, some of the toughest I've ever played against. And you felt at Liverpool like there was a time, I think, certainly my era, and you know, before that there was great teams, and then my era was a fantastic team. And then you felt like Torres was the piece of the jigsaw. We had an amazing midfield. You know, that was the team that really could challenge. I think we finished second. We got, you know, won the FA Cup. We got to a Champions League final in 2007. And it felt like one more season, you know, of recruitment, and we could really kick on and win it, maybe, really mount a challenge. But things sort of unravelled. You know, Mascherano left, Alonso left, Torres went to Chelsea, and then it was sort of like rebuild again, you know. So, yeah, just frustrating times, I think, for Liverpool. But when I see where they are now, it's all worth it, I suppose.
You know, just six teams have played in all of the Premier League's 30 seasons. Manchester United, Liverpool, Arsenal, Chelsea, Tottenham and Everton. Four of them have won the title, whilst Everton have been more involved at the bottom of the table. Tottenham, however, have a reputation of always just missing out. Crouch was a star for Spurs when they qualified for the Champions League, and he's scratching his head at their reputation.
Do you know what? I think, you know, when I was starting at Tottenham, but I went back there, and I think it was only two and a half seasons, maybe. But in my time there, there was none of that. That mentality was not there. It was a winning mentality. It felt like we had some top players and some winners in there. And I think if you look at the players, you know, Robbie Keane was obviously a top player. We had Van der Vaart, who'd been at big clubs. Luka Modric, who we've seen is a proven winner. And you know, that team for me, Gareth Bale again, you know, proved himself to be a winner. There was loads of players in that team that perhaps defy what people say about Spurs now. And we qualified for the Champions League for the first time in the club's history. And I felt that, again, we could have perhaps kicked on, but unfortunately, you know, losing players like Modric, losing players like Bale, Van der Vaart, Crouch, he left as well. it was difficult to kind of recover from that, really. And I get what people say now about Spurs, because it's been far too long since they've won anything, and you know they always seem to fall short, and it'd be a real shame if Harry Kane sort of, you know, stayed there, finished his whole career and didn't win a thing. It'd be a real shame.
That's not to say that Tottenham didn't pull up any trees over the Premier League's 30 years. The early 90s saw that hugely entertaining side managed by Ozzy Ardiles and spearheaded by Jurgen Klinsmann. Ardiles was one of the first foreign stars to come to English football in the late 70s, and he decided to repeat the trick by bringing in World Cup winner Klinsmann, who was one of the first of a glut of big international stars to turn the Premier League upside down. And you know what? We'll hear all about that next time on Premier League Storybook. Chapter 5 is The Culture Clash. BT Sport Pods.